Stillman and Company is delivered by TriStar Moving, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Trevor Maddich, ESPN analyst, in 25 minutes, his thoughts on the NFL draft upcoming. There's some Titans news out there that is not surprising. And yet, I am highly annoyed by it. But first, I forgot to do this last segment, so I'm going to need to do it now. ESPN 102.5 The Game and T-Mobile have teamed up to give away a hockey home gating party. Text the word GAME to 615-737-1025 now. Enter for a chance to win a Dos Equis prize pack, which includes a case of beer, dessert from Nothing Bundt Cakes, a T-Mobile prize pack, and food provided by 312 Pizza Company in Germantown. You must be 21 or older to enter. Okay, the NFLPA released a statement from the Tennessee Titan players. Quote, "We have come together as a team and have had several conversations about what is best for the players in our locker room. Based on the injury data from the previous year, along with the facts and recommendations provided by our union, we are in solidarity with other players across the NFL who will exercise their right not to attend in-person voluntary workouts. We understand that some players will need to be at our facility for different reasons during this time, and we respect the right of every player afforded to us in our CBA. The Titans are falling in line with the rest of the league, and they're not attending voluntary workouts this year." Now, I think we can all agree that COVID is not the reason why the Titans and these other teams across the league are not attending voluntary workouts. Fair?
That's fair.
Okay. I'm going to let you guys have your state on this, because this one, you know, this one really irks me. So what do you guys think about this news? Caroline, we'll start with you.
I agree with you that I think that they may be using COVID as an excuse to say, look, we don't feel comfortable showing up to workouts. We don't feel safe. We don't think the NFL protocols put in place are going to protect us, so on and so forth. I don't think that that's really the case. Maybe the coaches are like, look, we really can't afford to lose any more guys due to COVID protocols. Maybe that there is a little bit of truth to it. Look, if they don't want to attend voluntary workouts, don't. It's only going to affect them. And they can say that we'll do whatever workouts we need to do to stay in shape, to get better, to get stronger. We'll do that on our own time. We'll do that at home. You can say that all you want. But if you don't actually do that, then you are only hurting yourself and your team and your playoff chances, your shot at a Super Bowl. So if you don't want to do it, that's fine. You're really only hurting yourself. If you do what you're supposed to do at home and you do get stronger, you do get better, then great, you're getting better and you're not really putting yourself at risk at COVID. Even though I don't think that's the reason why they're not doing it, at least they're not putting themselves at risk. So if you don't want to do it, fine. That's your choice. It doesn't affect me.
Ian?
I kind of agree. If they can, you know, prove to the team and prove to some of the other players on the roster that they're accountable for, that they've been putting in some work in the offseason, then I think based on last year, from what we saw, they can get most of the work done virtually when it comes to some of this offseason stuff. Ideally, would they be in the building? Probably. But I'm not going to get too bent out of shape about it.
Okay. I disagree with both of you. I hate this. I hate it. When I started to see teams across the league do this, I knew inevitably the Titans would fall in line. And that's exactly what's happened. I don't care what other teams do, but go to work. That's what this is. This is NFL players that don't want to go to work. And the union is doing them a service by basically saying, you know what? We're going to use this as a chip in our back pocket for our next round of negotiations, that if they want us there at the facility, they're going to have to give us something in return. It's almost like Major League Baseball, who stupidly is making us watch pitchers hit for an entire season because they want to use that in their back pocket for their CBA negotiations. Go to work. You are an NFL player. You are paid a fortune. Go to work. I'm sorry. There are a lot of people in this pandemic that have adjusted their day-to-day lives based on realizing, you know what? We don't have to fly across the country to go to a meeting when we can just take a couple clicks on our computer and we can have that meeting. And I'm for that. But I don't think that canceling the off-season, the OTA program, I don't think that that's actually beneficial to the players. So when I saw all the other teams sit there and say, yeah, you know, the injury data says that we shouldn't do OTAs. I thought to myself, good. Let every other team sit on their asses at home and get fat and do nothing and not be with their teammates and not be with their coaches, and let the Titan players go to the Titans facility and let them train with the Titans coaches and let them get instructions from their new offensive coordinator and their new defensive coordinator, and maybe not absolutely suck on defense. Maybe. Maybe. But no, no, the union. Here's the union. Hey, don't go to work so we can use it as a negotiating chip. I used to always hear, it's so freaking lazy. That's what this is. It's lazy. It is so freaking lazy. They just don't want to go to work. That's what it is. Like, I've always joked, Floyd and I used to joke all the time, that we said, hey, once the Predators get knocked out of the playoffs or the NFL draft's over, we should just take a month off. And then come back at the start of training camp and get right back into it. And we joked because we knew that that wasn't realistic. We know that they're not going to just give me off June and July. They're not going to do that. Because I have to go to work. Because it is work. Because it is a job. And oh my God, I hate this. I hate when guys who make all this money are like, yeah, I'll stay at home. Yeah, I'm good. I'll stay at home. That is so freaking lazy. To all the people that last year were like, hey, last year proved we can have a season without having to have the off-season program, and we can be just fine. That's because the off-season program was canceled for everybody. So everybody didn't do it. So everybody had the same lack of training. Guess who organized workouts for his team? Guess who got kicked out of a public park? Guess who went to a local high school when the pandemic rates were surging in Florida? Tom Brady. And guess who was out there with Brady? The rest of the Buccaneers offense. And guess what happened to the Buccaneers this year? They won the flippin' Super Bowl. It's so lazy. It is so lazy. These players are lazy. And I get it. It's not the players. It's not Derrick Henry who's saying, I don't want to go and work out with my teammates. I don't want to go and get on the field and the instruction from my offensive coordinator who's new. It's the guy at the union who has been just spanked by the owners for the last three negotiations that's like, we got to get something in our back pocket. And he's going to the player reps and he's telling the player reps, hey, we got to hold out of the offseason program. We got to do this. So now the players release a statement, but it's lazy. That's what it is. And I'm sorry, but I think there are a lot of Titan fans out there who don't want to hear about how, you know what, it's just better if I stay home instead of go to work. Because that's what it is. It's work. I don't work for the Titans, so I can openly say this. Because you can't say this if you work in the NFL. You can't say that the voluntary mini camps and the voluntary off-season program and that it's all voluntary. Because it's really not. It's mandatory. Or it should be mandatory. Because when I look at my team, and I say, hey, my team is dedicated. Ryan Tannehill is dedicated. Derrick Henry is dedicated. Taylor Lewan is dedicated. Those guys are dedicated to winning for the Titans, for you, the fans. But now they've been pressured by the union not to go to work. And it's fine. It's fine. It's fine. But it's just lazy. It's lazy.
They're not going to work. It just means they're not doing voluntary workouts.
As a team.
As a team.
With their coaches.
They're still going to be working, and if they're not working out on their own terms, then they're only hurting themselves. If you this morning did not sit down and write any notes or do any prep for this show, who would that affect? It would affect you and this show. If they choose not to work out, it affects themselves and their team.
If they choose not to go to organized team activities, Todd Downing, their new offensive coordinator, cannot tell Ryan Tannehill what he wants. He can Zoom with him, but he cannot sit there on the field and say, no, Ryan, go this way with the ball. He cannot tell Josh Reynolds, a new wide receiver, hey, Josh, we want you to run it 7 yards cut in. They can't do that. They cannot do that. Ian, you will back me up on this. How often did the GM always talk about wanting the players on the field, you know, wanting them in the facility? Like, this is not...
Well, I don't know about necessarily in the facility, but he wanted some type of off-season work with the wide receivers and quarterback.
The idea... He told us one time that a guy's trainer, and I totally believe this, a guy's trainer is paid by the player. So even though the trainer is his job is to make the player, you know, put the player in better shape and, you know, get him stronger and faster, and that the player ultimately doesn't want to be yelled at every day by the trainer. That he doesn't want to pay a guy money to sit there and yell at him and say, hey, stop being lazy, push yourself, this, that, or the other. That the real pushing comes when it's somebody who you can't fire that is doing the pushing. That the real pushing comes when you are around your teammates who are pushing you. I had college students last year who were saying, just let us play. We just want to play. We just want to be together. Just let us play. And now, after the entire league went an entire season through a pandemic, and now we know more about it, we have vaccines, and we have all this stuff, and now all these players are like, yeah, man, I just don't think it's very I don't think it's very safe. I don't think it's very safe for us to go, so I'm just going to stay at home. It's lazy. Oh, God. And it's, you know what else bothers me too about this? It's that negotiating thing. It's like, oh, you know, the union wants to get something on the owners. And let me say something. The owners don't care. The owners don't care. The owners don't care that there's no off-season program. And the reason they don't care is because it doesn't affect their bottom line. So you think you're adding something to your pocket that you can negotiate with, when really the owners are laughing at you. Just like they laugh at you every time they negotiate a new deal. They laugh at you. That's what this is. This is as bad, in my opinion, for the Titans players. This is as bad as Major League Baseball making us watch pitchers hit this year. Next year, there's a new collective bargaining agreement in baseball. There will be a designated hitter in both leagues. I was a National League guy, and I was like, oh, I don't know if I like the designated hitter. We had it for 60 games last year. I'm like, get the DH in there. And the fans want it. The sport wants it. Like, the people in the sport want DH in both leagues. And the owners are like, oh, we need to keep that in our back pocket. In fact, they offered it to the players this year in exchange for expanded playoffs. And the players said no. So now it's got to be a negotiated issue. That's what this is. And I'm sorry. Go to work. I would love it if all 31 teams said, no, we're not going to go do the offseason program. But the Titans said, no, we're going to be the one team that does it. And I guarantee you would see results on the field if that happened. What the NFL's, I get it, the Players Association, they got to be tight. They got to stand united. They got it. Just drives me insane. It just drives, go to work. You guys make too much money. Go to work. Everybody else in America has to go to work. Everybody else in America took pay cuts. Go to work. I got my taxes done last week. I didn't make as much money in 2020 as I did in 2019. And guess what? I was glad that I was still able to go to work. But guess what? Go to work. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. I told you I'd go on a rant there. Oh my God. Just go to freaking work. Is it that hard? Like, maybe go against everybody else. And maybe you try to get yourself in position to win a championship. Is that all I'm asking? 615-737-1025 is our phone number. We'll have your reaction to that next. Stillman & Company, we're live from the Wholesaling Studio, powered by RumbleOn.com. We're delivered by TriStar Moving. It's ESPN 102.5 The Game. We're streaming on the Game Nashville app. The Titans are joining the NFLPA's groupthink and deciding not to participate in organized team activities. I was really hopeful. I'm not surprised by this. I was really hopeful, just for the record. I was hopeful that the Titans wouldn't do this, so that they could be like the one team that does work out with their coaches, and then you can see the results play out on the field. But clearly, nope, we gotta negotiate. So there you go. Phone line 615-737-1025. Trevor Maddich in less than 10 minutes. He'll join us with his thoughts on the draft. Caroline, what is on the text line?
Shane from Ashland City said, you can't get up and go freaking train, but you can stand side by side, play side by side, and sit side by side during a game. What sense does that make? Let me pay you millions just so you can tell me no, you don't want to do that.
Now, the players will argue that these are voluntary workouts. They will say it's voluntary. But at the same time, it doesn't, like, I want you to voluntarily decide to be a better team. I want you to voluntarily work harder so that your team can compete for a Super Bowl. I want you to voluntarily work together and learn the camaraderie and voluntarily choose to be with your coaches. I want you to do that voluntarily. I'm sorry. See, this is where it's different. The team can't say this because you can't say to somebody, you can't dock somebody for doing something that's not voluntary. But I'm not the team. I don't own the team. I'm not a member of the team. I'm not paid by the team. I don't even carry water for the team. And I'm saying, I want you to want yourself to be better. I want you to get your team in the best position possible. Now, they can't make you, but I want you to do that.
Along those same lines, Joey from Gallatin said, I would understand if Jared was mad at players for not going to mandatory workouts, but don't call it voluntary and then get upset if they choose not to go.
Again, I'm not upset with the structure of it. Like, I'm not the team saying, you got to be at voluntary workouts or you're going to get cut. I'm saying this for you. I'm saying this for the fans. Like, I'm saying, look, I want you to work harder than the other teams. I do. That's how you end up winning championships. You work harder. Why is Tom Brady, and the 199th pick in the draft, why is he such a success? Because he works harder than everybody else. How come Peyton Manning can sit there and diagram any play at any time and know exactly what the defense is going to do? Because he works harder than Vince Young works. Because he worked harder than Jamarcus Russell worked. He worked harder than Jay Cutler worked. I want my guys, my team, I want them to work harder. And I want them to voluntarily work harder. And the difference is unlike the team, I can complain about it when I feel like they're not doing it.
Also similarly, Chris from Nashville says, yet players like Derrick Henry are posting on Instagram videos working out in public gyms. Like what you were saying, there is an obvious difference between Derrick Henry and other running backs in the league, other players on the Titans roster. Derrick Henry is a standout guy for a reason because he is working out and he is going the distance. Granted, his workouts are kind of strange, but he's still doing them.
I didn't care a couple years ago Derrick Henry missed the OTAs because I believe he was finishing up his degree at Alabama. And he didn't communicate it really well, and Mike Mularkey got really mad, and there was some drama there for a couple of days. I'm not worried about Derrick Henry. I'm not worried about Derrick Henry. I'm worried about the team. I need this just as much for the coaches as I do the players. I need Shane Bowen to coach on that field. I need Todd Downing to coach on that field. I need Jim Schwartz to coach on that field. Like, I need those players with those coaches. I need it. And I think it's... The other thing that bothers me about this is it kind of feels like what I know of the Titans players, Tannehill, Henry, Lawan, Byard, AJ Brown, what I know of those guys is if they were just presented the choice straight up of, hey, do you want to go to Nashville and work out in Nashville and work out with the team and be on the field with the coaches? I think they'd say yes. But when the Players Association, the union that protects their rights, says, oh, we don't want to do this, now they kind of have to fall in line with everybody else. And that kind of makes me mad.
I do agree with you that this is a very pivotal time. And having with a new offensive coordinator, a new defensive coordinator, you need your team to be together. So I do agree with you in that it is a very pivotal time and very important for them to be together. I don't think it's about laziness.
I think big picture, I think it's lazy. I think big picture around the league, I think it's lazy. I think it's like one of these things too, the COVID shield of last year we didn't do it because of COVID. Well, okay, everybody didn't do everything last year because of COVID. Okay, well now this year we know you can do it because we saw you do it for a season. We know you can do it. They can do it in college. What happened to all the people that said, the safest I feel is in this facility? What happened to those people? That I don't know. Trevor Maddich joins us next, ESPN college football analyst. It seems like a trend with the 22nd pick, what the Titans are going to do. What does Trevor think of that trend? We'll get into that next. Plus, does he love the pick that everybody seems to be picking the Titans to make? We'll do that next with Trevor Stillman and Company. We're delivered by TriStar Moving. It's ESPN 102.5 The Game. Stillman & Company is delivered by TriStar Moving. The NFL draft 9 days away. That's right. We'll have our special draft preview show Thursday night right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Chris Sanders, TV, will be with me. But another mock draft today. This is a dueling mock draft from Mel Kiper Jr. and Todd McShay, where Mel makes the first pick, then Todd makes the second pick, and so on and so forth. And last week, Mel Kiper Jr.'s mock draft had Elijah Moore at number 22, the wide receiver out of Ole Miss, has Elijah Moore at 22. Today, Todd McShay in the Titans position at 22 picks Elijah Moore. Trevor Maddich joins us now, ESPN college football analyst. Trev, another mock draft, another Elijah Moore pick. Is it just groupthink that now it feels like a lot of people are circling Elijah Moore to the Titans? Was it his great pro day that makes a lot of people think that Elijah Moore to the Titans makes sense? I don't see him in the first round in many other drafts if the Titans let the cat out of the bag. What do you think about it?
They may have. I think, Jared, that part of the reason he's starting to get a lot of luck for the Titans at 22 is because of that pro day. I mean, we see on tape Elijah Moore be able to snap off routes so quickly that college corners aren't able to follow him. I mean, he gets in and out of a break as fast as any receiver really I've seen in a long time coming out of college. But he also ran a 4.35 40. Now, he's thought of really as a slot receiver at Ole Miss, thinking that he would catch the ball, have some space because of the way he runs his routes, and then make yards after the catch. But the fact that he's got that kind of speed tells you that he can get down the field and stretch the defense. And that's an interesting concept because he's not a big guy. He's listed at 5'9.5", about 180 pounds. And I think that's one of the reasons that people haven't mocked him in the first round until after his pro day, until recently, certainly. But, you know, he doesn't have a lot of ability to reach up to catch that ball. He doesn't have a big catch radius. But 4.35, when you get it all on the field, will scare the defense and make the safety stay deep. And so this is the kind of a guy that could be sort of a not quite as fast as DeSean Jackson that you can plug in and send him deep and open up stuff underneath. That's not how they use him most of the time. But to have the ability to do that means that they have a lot of scheme versatility depending on what the defense is trying to do. And if the third corner that's trying to cover him can't run with him, they can check a route and send him deep anytime they want. So it really is an interesting fit for Tennessee because of that.
Todd McShay said in his explanation that he was going back and forth between Elijah Moore and Kadarius Toney out of Florida. We know, in no particular order, that Ja'Marr Chase, Jalen Waddle, and Devontae Smith are the top three receivers in the draft and will be well off the board before the Titans pick at 22. But, Trevor, where would you put Elijah Moore in that second group of wide receivers?
You know what? I'd have put him a little bit farther down than he is now. I've got him up higher than I did before his pro day because of that speed. I just didn't realize that he had that much high-end speed. And so I would actually put him in that next tier, near the top of that next tier. Kadarius Toney, for a lot of reasons, I love. But there's a couple of things that might keep him from being drafted ahead of Elijah Moore. One is that Elijah Moore is already a very crisp route runner. And you can see year to year to year, he got better and better at Ole Miss at running routes. So he's all ready to step into the NFL and not need a whole lot of work on the basic fundamentals of a lot of different routes. Kadarius Toney was hurt for two of his years, at least missed a lot of time in 2017 and 2019, I believe. Finally had a fully healthy year last year. And his routes are really ad-lib. It's sort of like sandlot playground routes, where he's not precise with his depth and his timing and things like that. But he's able to get matched up on a guy and just, from a playground standpoint, fool him, get in turn, make him miss, and off he goes. Well, that's great in college, but in the NFL, timing is important or your quarterback's going to get nailed. So the question with Kadarius Toney is, can he develop the crisp route running at the NFL level, or is he about as good a route runner as he's going to be? And that's the question that people will need to ask.
What do you think about the other wide receivers that are kind of in that slot? Rashad Bateman is one that a lot of people, we hear a lot of Elijah Moore. We also hear a lot of Rashad Bateman out of Minnesota. I love Bateman, and I love Rondale Moore out of Purdue. How would you compare those guys with Elijah Moore?
You know, I love I love Rondale Moore. I just love him. He's only 5'7". And so he's a guy that you'd have to use in a really unique way. But much like Elijah Moore running out of the slot and having crisp breaks out of his routes, that kind of a thing, I think Rondale Moore has a better chance to be a matchup problem than Rashad Bateman out of Minnesota. Rashad Bateman is a big, tall guy who went up and just beat the ball, just beasted the ball away from defenders when it was coming down. Did a really good job. Here's the problem with the transition for Bateman from college to the NFL. He's not particularly sudden. He doesn't have a big burst. And he's not really a particular speedster. He's fast enough, but he builds up his speed. And then when he gets to the top of his route and he needs to make a break, he breaks, but he doesn't burst. And the problem is there are so many corners in the NFL that are going to stay with him stride for stride. And so I don't know that he's got much greater upside than he already has now. I see Elijah Moore NFL ready now. I see Kadarius Toney as a potential great upside, but he needs to improve those routes. I don't see how Rashad Bateman gets better at the next level because he doesn't have the physical ability like those other two guys to burst and to change his speed and to hit that second gear and then to hit that third gear. He just sort of mushes through stuff, and when the ball comes down, well, he's usually better at getting it than the other guy. Well, that's nice in college, but who knows about here, you know?
Trevor Maddich, ESPN College Football Analyst, presented by Houston Clinic Orthopedics, when experience matters. Trev, I put myself yesterday in Dane Brugler's 7-round mock draft, and I made myself pick at every spot for the Titans, so I could only go with who was on the board. I had Elijah Moore on the board. I had Gregory Russo on the board out of Miami. I had Gregory Newsome the second out of Northwestern, the corner, on the board. And I took Azeez Ojulari. I keep hearing either some people love Ojulari and they've got him ranked in the top 15 of the draft, and others see him as an end of the first round guy. I picked Ojulari because I think it's harder to find a pass rusher in the second round than it would be a wide receiver or a corner in this year's draft. And yet the more I read and the more I see, the more I'm starting to think there's going to be a team within the first 21 picks that likes Ojulari more or as much as I do and will take him before he gets to 22.
I agree with you. I think that's more likely, Jared. The thing about Ojulari that makes him so polarizing is his ability to go to plan B. In other words, he's got tremendous burst off the line to rush the passer or to have tackles for loss, get into the backfield. He led the SEC last year in sacks, tackles for loss, and forced fumbles. And that's because he's so quick off the line, he disrupts plays before they have the chance to get started, and he gets the quarterbacks before they expect him to be there. That's great. But it works so well that he never really developed that much of a counter to that initial move, which is burst up the field, bend low, get around the corner, which is great, but he needs that second move. I think he's got the athleticism to be able to develop that counter move and then another counter move off on top of that. But you've got to trust that he can really do that. But that's one of the reasons that some teams have him graded lower. Plus, there are times when he kind of disappears. You know, you'll see him smash an offensive lineman on a running play, slide off and make the tackle. It's beautiful. And then you'll see him ooze into an offensive lineman and get completely swallowed up, and he disappears. So why is that? You know, can he do the former more? Or is he average at that stuff? That's what you got to decide. I agree with you, Jared, that I like his ability to run and burst. And I think he'll be able to coach the rest of it, the counters to all that. And what you can't coach is that kind of speed. And this is in Mike Vrabel, a head coach who's defensive minded, who comes from the Patriots mindset that you take guys, find out what they do best, and create the scheme around what that guy does best and let him do it, right? And so right off the bat, I think Ojulari will be a tremendous asset to disrupt the opposing offenses in the backfield, and then they'll let him develop, and we'll see how far he can develop from there. But I'm with you. If he's there and the Titans take him at 22, it wouldn't bother me at all because they'll make the team faster, more explosive, and more athletic.
Trev, I got crushed because when I did that 7-round mock draft exercise, I didn't draft a tight end. And obviously the Titans have a hole at tight end. But I just felt like the second round was too high for Tommy Tremble or Brevin Jordan. And then Dane Brugler had them going at 73 and 74. The Titans don't pick until the 80s. And so unless they trade down at some point to get into that range or trade up at some point, I don't know when the right time to pick a tight end who could be a day one starter in this draft would be. How imperative is it that the Titans find a tight end?
They need to find one. Furkser, I think, is going to flourish. You know, now that Jonnu Smith is gone, I think Furkser is going to rise up and be a very good, reliable pass-receiving target. But they can use another one. And they can use a guy that's a better combo of blocker and receiver. And the two guys you mentioned are the two guys I love the best in that third round place. I mean, Brevin Jordan out of Miami was banged up a bit last year, so I think he's going to fall a little bit farther than he should based on his talent. Talk about Tremble out of Notre Dame, who probably is the best blocking tight end coming out of the draft, but he's also a very good receiving tight end. So those guys are gone in that third round. You know, you don't want to reach for a guy, especially you don't want to reach for a tight end. But, you know, I like Kenny Yeboah out of Ole Miss. I mean, he's got the vertical speed to get down the field. He's a pretty good blocker, although he can be better at it. You know, he's got some good good hands, good route running, and he's raw. But he caught a lot of balls for Ole Miss, so he's got a lot of experience. And you can tell that he's got the raw natural talent to develop into a very solid tight end, and he just needs some work. But that's what you're talking about when you're drafting a tight end in the region of the third round.
Trevor Maddich is our guest, presented by Houston Clinic Orthopedics, when experience matters. Coming up next, I talked to a college coach, and I asked him about top prospects in the draft, specifically Elijah Moore. And this coach would know. I will tell you what he told me, and we'll get Trevor's reaction to it as well. Plus, all the Mac Jones chatter, what does Trevor make of that? Trevor Lawrence had some interesting comments about his desire for football. All that's on the table. Trevor Maddich is our guest, ESPN college football analyst, presented by Houston Clinic Orthopedics, when experience matters. Stillman & Company is delivered by TriStar Moving on ESPN 102.5, the game. Stillman & Company is delivered by TriStar Moving, the NFL draft 9 days away. Trevor Maddich is our guest, ESPN college football analyst, presented by Houston Clinic Orthopedics, when experience matters. Okay, Trevor, there's been a lot of talk of Elijah Moore, the wide receiver out of Ole Miss, to the Titans with the 22nd pick. There's also been a lot of talk of Greg Newsome. There's been a lot of talk of Aziz Ojulari. There's been a lot of talk about different guys. So I asked a college football coach who would know. Tons of SEC experience, tons of Big Ten experience, some ACC experience as well, and I don't know where else this coach has coached. But I asked this college football coach what he thought about Elijah Moore. Specifically, Cole Kublick came on our show, SEC Network analyst, and compared Elijah Moore to Antonio Brown. I asked the coach, what do you think of it? The coach said, that's not a bad comparison, but I kind of agree that Rondale Moore and Amari Rodgers will all be in that 35 to 70 range. Don't pass up on Aziz Ojulari or Jalen Phillips for Elijah Moore. What do you think of that, Trevor?
Yeah, I would agree with that. This draft has an interesting kind of comparison between offensive tackle and wide receiver. There's a lot of them available. But after about the first four or five, everybody's about the same in that you're going to have to pick what upside you like and what potential downside you can live with, what risks you can live with. And so when you talk about Ojulari, you know what he can do from an athletic standpoint. And while you can teach guys and develop guys as you get them farther down the draft, the physical tools that Ojulari has means that his upside is vastly greater than most of the guys that would be drafted below him. Now, that's not to say he'll reach that upside, but the potential is there. I think the floor for Ojulari is also pretty high. In other words, I don't think he'll be a bust of a player because of his speed and athleticism. You can always find a way to use that, even if it's just to attack. Just, Aziz, go downhill and attack. Okay, he'll disrupt things all over the place. And if he can't do anything else, that floor is still really good. I think the floor under Elijah Moore, a wide receiver, is also pretty high. And the ceiling is pretty high. You know, he'll need to overcome dealing with taller, longer rangier corners in the NFL than he had to face in the SEC. And we'll see how he can do that because he's only a little over 5'9". But I think both of those guys have a high floor, and a high ceiling. Now you start to get lower in terms of receivers, pass rushers, guys like that. That floor drops and the ceiling drops. And so, you know, if you're ever in doubt, go with the guy with the better athleticism.
Trev, how important is offensive line in this draft for the Titans? I say that because nobody looks at it as a total need, but this time last year, the Titans were probably in a better position because they knew they had Dennis Kelly, who could play right tackle. They've got Kendall Lamb, who's kind of a backup they're going to put out there, or Ty Sambrylo, who's kind of a backup they're going to put out there. Ben Jones is up at the end of the year at center. Roger Saffold carries a huge cap hit into next year. Taylor Lewan, who's missed half of the games over the last 2 years, also carries a huge cap hit next year that the Titans could get themselves out of. Last year, clearly tackle mattered to them because they used a first-round pick on it. How big do you think offensive line is for the Titans this year in this draft?
No, it's big because for the Titans, Jared, you know, and you see this, and we've talked about this, that their mentality, the whole thing starts with the offensive line, not just being able to road grade holes in the running game, but to set the physical tone. Not for the running game, for the defense, because they face them in practice all the time, just to set that tone, and they need that. That's one of the reasons that losing Jack Conklin was such a big deal. I mean, the guy was a road grader, but he also was nasty, and that spreads in your offensive line room and into the rest of the team. And so Taylor Lewan is another guy like that. The problem is cost. What do you do about cost? And there are some really intriguing prospects in terms of this draft for offensive line, both a guard and a tackle. And if they hit on some of those guys, they could have those developmental guys that maybe a year or two from now could step in and give them exactly what the Titans need. A guy like Walker Little out of Stanford, for example, we've talked about him a little bit. He's left tackle. He's 6'7", about 3'10". Didn't play last year. He opted out. 2019, he got hurt in the first game. Before that, he was a guy that was thought of as so athletic that he'd be one of the first tackles taken when he came out in the draft. Well, right now, he's a question mark because of limited play. But he's not a guy that you see crush people. I mean, you do not see him, you know, just annihilate people. And you don't want a technician necessarily to be your long-term starter on this team, right? And so I think there are some guys, kid out of Michigan, kid out of Oklahoma State, that are the nasty attitude that you would need. And because after the first few guys, Penei Sewell, Christian Darrisaw, those guys, there are guys that are going to have that attitude that you then need to decide, can you coach them up to make sure they can pass protect well enough and make sure that their run blocking technique is good enough, right? And so that's one thing I think as a Titans fan I'm looking for. I don't want a guy in the O-line who's a technician. I want a guy who has good technique and he's an intimidator. And that's important because right now, you're right. Right now, the O-line looks pretty good. Right tackle, we'll see. But the rest of the line looks solid. But in 2 years, you may have three or even four new guys up there.
Trevor Maddux is our guest. I have a theory, Trevor, and you may know something about this with your Washington background. The media that covers the NFL can't fathom the idea of Mac Jones at 3 to San Francisco. But the more I think about it, the more I think about the fact that I'm not sure that Shanahan system, I'm not sure that those coaches want quarterbacks that can run. Justin Fields can run and is more athletic, and Trey Lance, we know, is more athletic than Mac Jones. Mac Jones' biggest knock is that he's not athletic. But then I thought about it. In the Shanahan system, going all the way back to Mike, whether it's Mike Shanahan, Kyle Shanahan, Matt LaFleur in Green Bay, whether it's Sean McVay, Arthur Smith, or now, you know, you go all throughout. To me, there have been two guys that can run at quarterback. RG3 in Washington and Mariota here under LaFleur and Arthur Smith for half a season. I think they want the statue in the pocket. All those guys, Matt Ryan's a statue. Jared Goff is a statue. Ryan Tannehill can move a little bit, but he's certainly not Mariota. He's certainly not Justin Fields. Kirk Cousins is a statue compared to RG3. I think that's what the Shanahan system wants, or at least that's what Shanahan and San Francisco thinks, and that's why I think that it's going to be Mac Jones at number three, even though I wouldn't take Mac Jones with the third overall pick. What do you think of that?
What I think is that, and this is sort of a pie in the sky discussion, right? Because what if Tom Brady could run like Lamar Jackson? Mm-hmm. Yay! Well, Tom Brady's not great because he can't run and he's a statue in the pocket. He's great because he's great in the pocket and because he has to be. You know, Matt Ryan, same way, of Atlanta. You've got Aaron Rodgers in Green Bay, who is great in the pocket, but he's also got a lot more mobility. And Patrick Mahomes is state-of-the-art. That is the best combination of both a passer and a runner that we see in the NFL right now. And so do you want a guy in the Shanahan system who is a statue? No. But first you have to have a guy who can make the decisions and distribute well. It is more important for Shanahan's system that a quarterback do that than that he run at the expense of being able to make the decisions. And so I really think San Francisco should and will go with Justin Fields. I think Justin Fields has the physical ability to do everything that Mac Jones can do, except with a stronger arm. You know, you'll have to decide on the board in the interview process on Zoom whether he can, you know, whether he's got a good base of understanding to start from learning the NFL systems and NFL defenses. But, you know, Mac Jones is a superstar on the board. I mean, a superstar. You know, where is Justin Fields? I don't know. I just don't know. I just haven't heard. But if he is able to make those decisions to the satisfaction of Shanahan, then his ability to run on top of it now gives him, you know, a Patrick Mahomes style. I'm not saying he's Mahomes, but a Patrick Mahomes style threat to defenses. And I kind of think that's what they're looking for. But if I were them, if I'm satisfied with the interviews on the board with Justin Fields, I'd take him over Mac Jones in a heartbeat because of what Shanahan was able to do with RG3. I'm sure he'd love to be able to replicate RG3. The problem with RG3, lots of problems with RG3. But one is that he never developed after that first year the ability to mentally adjust to what defenses were doing fast enough. In other words, he could tell you on the whiteboard what he needed to do, RG3 now. But when he got into the game, he was always a half a second or a second slow in making that decision. It's not because he's not smart. He's super smart. He just didn't have that ability. And so that, to me, is what Shanahan wants. And so, yeah, we all want Superman to be our quarterback, right? But I think in Justin Fields, you might have a chance to have him.
I don't disagree with what you're saying. I wouldn't take Mac Jones third. I'm just telling you, I think they're going to take Mac Jones third. And I think they got in front of Atlanta, Arthur Smith, a Shanahan-style offensive coordinator with Matt Ryan as his quarterback, and we know that Matt Ryan's not getting any younger, and we know that Kyle Shanahan likes Matt Ryan. I think they got in front of Atlanta for a reason. That's just my take. Trevor Maddich, Trev, as always, we will talk to you next week. We'll have 2 days before the draft when we talk to you next week, and I know you will be brushing up on tape because, quite frankly, I envision that that's pretty much all you do anyways is watch tape and 90 Day Fiancé.
I do. I watch tape, and I explain to my wife why I just watch tape. So that's what I do. I look forward to seeing you next week. It's getting close.
Yep. Always good to talk to you, Trev.
Thanks, Jim.
Yep. Trevor Maddich, ESPN College Football Analyst, brought to you by Houston Clinic Orthopedics, when experience matters. Todd McShay and Mel Kiper Jr. had a nice little exercise today where they did a dueling mock draft. Mel makes one pick. Todd makes the next pick. I've decided. Caroline Fenton is going to step into the ring. We're going to see how she does. My guess is her draft will not be as good as mine. If I just modestly had to take a guess, I would say it's not going to be as good as mine. But we will see. Next, Stillman & Company right here. It's ESPN 102.5 The Game. By the way, speaking of the NFL draft, we got the best draft coverage. TD, Chris Sanders, Mark Howard. That's right. Don't miss Nashville's best draft coverage on Thursday, April 29th and Friday, April 30th on ESPN 102.5 The Game, presented by Founders Brewery, Apple Collision Centers, Freedom Tire Guys, and MTGRT.com, your live and local mortgage expert. Be sure to join us on site as we'll be broadcasting live on Thursday, April 29th from 3rd and Home, Germantown's Bar with a Ballpark, and on Friday, April 30th from Boomba's Craft Pizza and Tap House in East Nashville. And again, I don't think you can find better Titans experts than those three, but it will be good for us to have Mark Howard all night breaking down the draft with us. We are so excited. Stillman and Company, we're delivered by TriStar Moving. It's ESPN 102.5 The Game.